Welcome to Everyone Deserves Sunshine. I'm Diana.
And I'm Anusha. We're the girls in the crease, and you are on episode 7, Queer Representation.
So throughout this podcast, Anusha and I have analyzed heated rivalry from many different angles, like intimacy, masculinity, neurodivergence. We had a music episode. We talked about like private versus public life and so on.
We're also very aware that we're two women analyzing a love story about two men falling for each other. And while we hope that we're approaching it with care and intention, we know that's a layer of experience that we don't have because we are, in fact, not queer men.
Yes. So because of that, we invited someone whose perspective we genuinely respect and want to hear, not to speak for all gay and queer men, but to share his experience of watching the show and like what resonated and what maybe didn't.
I'm so excited to talk to Mason today.
All right, let's get into it.
Welcome, Mason. Welcome to the show. And thank you so much for joining us today. We're so interested and curious to hear your thoughts about heated rivalry. You know, what felt true to you, what maybe a straight audience may not fully comprehend. First things first, I just met you moments ago. I'm already completely charmed by you.
Oh, shucks.
Tell us how you met Diana.
Yeah. So funny enough, what was her name? I forget. Someone at work.
But I work with, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I told them that I was going to this.
Colleague.
Yeah. Work colleague. Yeah, yeah. I told them that I was going to the Heated Rivalry rave in Philly. And this was something really unique for me because I don't really go out that much anymore. So I was expressing how excited I was. And they were like, wait, my best friend is going to be there as well. And I went, all right, cool. We're going to be best friends then.
Yes.
And I show up in the cold in Philly. We check our coats. And all of a sudden I hear, wait, Mason? And I turn around and I see her. And it was like the scene where we see each other from across the bar. And I was like, oh,
that
my God.
That's exactly what happened.
Which
but
was
less raging jealousy.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. 100%
I mean,
joy.
I was a little jealous. I was a little jealous to see Mason with his friend.
But that's how we got to meet. And I'm very happy that my friend got to introduce me to my best friend now.
Mason, when you first watched Heated Rivalry, like, what was your immediate response, reaction, anything? Tell us what you want to talk about.
And also, we need your origin story of how you got into it. We ask
everyone. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We ask everyone the origin story. That's true.
Yeah, okay. So my Heated Rivalry origin story. So my friend that I went to the rave with, we were having a girls' night maybe like 6-8 months ago. And our girls' night is going to Barnes & Noble. So our ritual is I will pick her up. We will drive to McDonald's, get ourselves a fountain beverage. So I'm not a big book reader. I love manga. I love anime. So that's the section I will usually go to. But my friend Chelsea loves romance books and loves hockey. And she was looking at a hockey romance. And I didn't know what it was at the time. And I was like, oh, that looks kind of cool. Because like I grew up watching hockey. My mom was a huge Ron Hextall fan from the Flyers. I had an Eric Lindros jersey growing up, like as a little baby. So I was like, oh, I like hockey. And I'm kind of getting into romance. And then fast forward, I'm like scrolling on TikTok and I see all these like fan edits of these hot men. And I'm like, what is this? I want to know what this is. And I text my friend about it. And she's like, it's Heated Rivalry. Have you watched it yet? And I was like, wait, no. Okay, hold up. What's it on? HBO. I was like, oh, I got rid of HBO. I guess I'm going to download it again and spend money. I love spending money. But so I binged it because at this point, it had aired completely. Once it finished, I was left with that void of when you finish something and you know it's complete and you don't know what to do with yourself. So you just immerse yourself completely into it. I bought all the books. I found out I love smut and romance.
Oh,
and it's just beautiful.
Mason, welcome. Welcome to my world.
I got immediately immersed into the story. And also, like, growing up in the 2010s, like, so I graduated high school 2013. Okay. And part of my coming out story revolved in 2013. Like, a lot of this hit home to me. If I had this when I was growing up and my little closeted white gay boy in high school, because the closest I had was Glee. And Glee was very like comedic, but it was also like it would not fly in today's day and age. I rewatch it as a comfort show for the comedy of it. Sue Sylvester is one of my favorite characters of all time, even though she is incredibly problematic. But it was nice seeing romance, especially modern romance, like that wasn't so dire and dark. And I know like probably a lot of people say that, but like the queer characters that I would watch were always like a plot point or killed off or like the butt of a joke. So one of the first characters I think I saw, it was in Happy Endings, the comedy show. And it was this man played by a straight guy that was the butt of the joke, was the comedic relief. Then there's like characters that you would fall in love with. Any of y'all sci-fi people? Battlestar Galactica is my hyperfixation show. Love it dearly. But like one of the characters in there is queer, but the only reason you would know is if you watched a web series add-on that wasn't a part of the actual airing. Those characters are usually so beloved and they use it to be that shock factor. And it also makes you wonder, like, what about them makes them so loved? People love these characters having these really nice moments and also so real moments, because there is a bit of heartache and a little bit of turmoil that happens in the series that resolves very humanly, I would say. It's not just like shock for the sake of shock. And one of the big things, like Scott Hunter and Kip's whole romance, like Kip is going through a lot. He's giving up his friends. He's giving up his family to be with Scott. And Scott's like, but my career. And it's interesting seeing it as a fear of coming out because of the career versus the fear of coming out because like I might get hurt. I might get victimized in some way. And a lot of queer folks do upon coming out. I always thought that was so interesting because this story, like they're really rich hockey players that have a really nice cottage and a really nice condo. So there's like that little bit of escapism that we get, like being like, oh, what if I could afford like a really nice condo with this really nice romance? There's like a lot of stuff that like I'm watching it and I see myself and then I'm like, oh, this is still a little bit out of my reach because I'm not going to these galas that are like suit and tie with really important people in there. So it's like it was nice seeing the escapism part of it where I'm like I'm walking out of my life and like just like observing something completely different, but then seeing those moments where it's like I felt that before, I've done that before, because I'm not a perfect human. I have done a lot of work on myself. There's points where I was a Scott Hunter and putting like a lot of hardship onto my partner. And I'm lucky to have my partner who is a behavioral technician who also helps me unpack a lot of the things. Because growing up, I almost would classify myself as emotionless in a lot of ways. And he feels emotions so deeply. He actually taught me how to experience emotions in a way. And one of the other things that shocked me about this show is how great support systems all the characters had. Like one of the big things in my queer identity, and that was a big thing for me, is finding my found family and the people that I can trust with anything. And like all the friends were so good about keeping secrets and being like ride or dies. Kip's friend, Elena, ride or die, amazing person looking out for Kip. Shane having Rose. Rose could have like been like, oh my gosh, this is the last time I'm going to be a beard for somebody. But instead allowed Shane to like speak to his life and allow him that moment to say, sometimes I like kind of like being the hole for the peg. And Ilya did have Svetlana and like the support systems that they had were so strong, where there was so many points where all of this story could have went wrong because a secret gets out, because a lot of folks love to gossip and their people didn't. And I thought that was so refreshing, so important, because in queer culture, finding your found family is so important. And the fact that all these characters had that in a regard, I thought was amazing to see.
You know, actually, I have a question about that, because you're right. They do have that. But what they don't have is like any sort of connection to a queer community. So I was just wondering how that hit you. Did you feel an ache for them, like a sense of loneliness, despite the fact that they had all these ride or dies, that they haven't connected with that like more extensive found family, all of those people that you mentioned who taught you about queer culture and queer history?
Yeah, they don't have that, right? Is
they
what
don't
you're
have
saying.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't have any of that. Yeah, they're like navigating that all on their own.
Yeah. And there's also like the thought of like, is it something that they'd be interested in? Because there's also the idea that like, is my sexuality my whole identity? Mm. Is it something that I want to learn the history about versus this is the person that I love and I just want to figure out how to maintain this with the most amount of safety as possible? Because it is so true. Scott Hunter did come out, pave the way for them, even though they're not out yet. But they showed nothing about, like, in the TV series, at least the aftermath of it, of because we know in at least the United States, that every action has an equal and opposite reaction, especially in the news. And so there's also going to be that negative kind of like, and just how like horrific and taxing it is on an individual, and like how pointed the words get, like the F slur, and even with how common it is still to this day. But yeah, I'd be curious if they go into that in the next series, or if they're even interested in that, because I think like the genesis of them finding this out on their own is their love for each other. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's less about wanting to know about being, and this is me reading into them, it's like, it's less about being gay, but more about being just so enamored and in love with each other.
I sometimes wonder, because everything in the direction feels like a choice to me. When the world is in crisis, or I am feeling like all the existential dread, sometimes I call it making my world small. And I like just try to like focus on this thing in front of me, usually my children. I'm wondering now that you're saying it, is that a choice to make this thing that's so big come to like sort of a micro level of like humanness? And you're, instead of looking at the macrocosm of where these characters exist in, you know, this community or that, or immigrant community or neurodivergence, they're just like bringing it to the like small. I don't know. Maybe it is a
like literally their relationship. Like, yeah, that's it. That's all that matters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And everything else you extrapolate. Like, you see Kip and, you know, Scott, like, you see the external forces that push them apart without slammed over our head. Like, you can have this very personal story and still really understand that, why did they split up? We know why they split up. It's not because they're not in love with each other. Why is Shane so deeply in the closet? All of these giant existential questions are still like hanging around the air. So I wonder if it was a choice. I think it's a brilliant choice in the right hands, because it still allows for nuance.
Yeah, but it's like the human moment. And that's what makes it so accessible to people, because a lot of folks have that experience of falling in love for someone or with someone. And I think like that human moment allows you to connect to it versus the idea of gay people and whatnot. It's like, I'm connected to the characters, not necessarily just the sexuality of it. That came, at least with me, later on, because I was like, that maybe I just love awkwardness. That awkward exchange in the very first scene, I was like, I think I'm gonna love this. This character is so weird. There's so much layers to it, because the author came out and said, oh yeah, I didn't explicitly say it, but Shane is neurodivergent.
Yeah.
And so there's like little things that you pick up on of, oh, well, like what I said was weird, which probably shouldn't just be called weird, is just because it's not typical of a neurotypical person. I like people with character. Cookie cutter ain't for me.
Yeah. Then they give them a lot of character, a lot of depth, a lot of complexity. And that's why I think we're so obsessed with them as people, and to like analyze every single thing that they do.
So what was one of those scenes for you, like those pivotal scenes where you like felt like you saw yourself or saw elements of your life reflected back at you?
One of the most touching ones that sits rent-free in my head is when they're on the couch in the cottage and like their feet are touching, but they're on opposite sides. And like when you think about like modern romance and whatnot, it's like we have these phones and we're tied to them like glue. Mm-hmm. And the idea that you could be doing something on the couch together, but you're still together and just like touching feet. Like it's something small, something so tiny, but something that happens in this house every single day. Mm-hmm. And to see two men doing that was just like, wow, wait, like I'm so used to like heteronormative romance and seeing it on the screen. So it was, that's just something that lives rent free in my head. Also, like when Hollander, when Shane first time that he had sex with Ilya, and it wasn't perfect. Like there was a little bit of awkwardness to it. And one, that being so real, like sometimes the most fun sex is like the awkward sex where you start laughing and like things just happen. Mm-hmm. And it's just like that connection, that romance, which this show does so well in ways that also are about consent, because especially not in the queer community at large, in a lot of the followings that I've been a part of and grow up with, sex is like critical to even like friendships. And a lot of times consent people think is implied when it is not. And so just like some of those moments where you might ask a question and it just like starts a laughter. I just was thought like, oh my God, like things don't happen perfectly. And this show showed that super well. One of the things the show did not show, which is I'm just like, oh my gosh, I hope people like people that aren't gay will hopefully take away of hearing this, is after a hockey game, like bottoming, not likely to happen. Like you got preparation. You got preparation. You have to change your diet a day in advance. You got to clean yourself out. It's a whole ordeal. It's like hours in preparation just for a moment. I was like, I hope people don't think that gay people just have sex willy-nilly like that. Like sometimes it's planned. Like, and you got to plan like days in advance for it. But there are better bottoms than I that can do things on a dime.
Like, does it? Like, can it happen like immediately after, I don't know, you get home from, you know, dinner and you haven't been prepping? Like, I mean, I know there's prep involved in terms of like lube and all that, but like, can it happen without the other prep? Or not usually?
It can. It depends on the person, because like as a gay person participating in gay sex, meaning anal, you know, there is occupational hazard with that. And there are folks that are absolutely, you know what, I know it's a hazard. I'm not afraid of it. If stuff comes, it comes. There's some folks that take certain fiber supplements that will make sure that like they are fully clear. There's some folks that know their body super well and can actually control all of that. So it's a spectrum. And I was talking to my friend that I went to the Heated Rivalry rave with, and I was like, one of the things I was thinking about, I was like, the sex is so hot. They have it so often. And I am so jealous.
You're like, that's the most unrealistic part. Like the
part. I'm like, if I could have it like that every day. Oh, my God. Well, not every day, because there were years in between.
Right. Yeah.
But it's like, I'm more anxious about the prepping for sex than the actual sex itself. Because I like to have fun with it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, live loose a little.
That's great perspective. It's like the reality of, you know, this is just part of how things work, you know?
Seeing them fall in love from the very beginning when he awkwardly introduced himself. Mm-hmm. Like, just like watching it grow from there into the scene in the workout room at the end of that episode of the first episode to, gosh.
Let me ask you, a lot of people say, not a lot, but there are many people, myself included, who didn't get into the show until episode 3. Were you into it like immediately? And what do you think about that? You feel free to insult me. It's fine. The internet already has.
Oh my gosh. I can never insult my best friend.
Or was it just...
No,
just
on threads, people are literally like, if you didn't like the first two episodes, you don't understand cinema. Mm.
I actually tell most of the people that I try to get in the show, I'm like, make it to episode 3. And I think that there is beauty in episode 1 and 2. And the folks that like really like respond well to it are probably more progressive in the sense that like watching sexual things in front of other people doesn't scare them. I think there's like those first two episodes were interesting for a lot of folks because you're seeing gay sex on TV being the main focal point for 2 episodes. And then Scott Hunter comes in which we find out in episode 5, becomes the reason that enables the first couple, Shane and Ilya, to get together. And so I think like episode 3 is kind of like, and also book 1 starts with Scott Hunter too. So it's interesting how they merge the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it is okay to say get to episode 3 for some folks, because they might find discomfort in seeing a lot of sex. Yeah. And also the pacing of the show is new for a lot of folks. It's 6 episodes over a decade. Like, there's a lot going on in a short amount of time. So cinematic masterpiece, the whole thing. I completely agree. But I think there's reasons to say, like, it could be uncomfortable to someone at first. And episode 3 is a good jumping off point for people.
Yeah. I love sex and watching it on TV. Like, you know, I watch like Outlander, and only because of the sex, not for historical accuracy of the show. Even though I have learned a lot of American history watching Outlander. Mm-hmm. However, my point is that like I've never actually watched gay sex. And to me, I saw it and I was like, ooh, interesting. And also like, do I like this? But I wasn't sure, like, just to be honest, like, I wasn't sure. And then when I saw Scott and Kip, I'm like, oh, I do like this because I like them as a couple. And then when I went back, obviously, to watch episode 1 and 2 the second time around, I was like, oh, I really like this, like, because now I, like, knew them as characters. And I guess I needed, like, a little bit more love, maybe, you know, perhaps. Maybe that's what I'm used to. That's what I've been, you know, that's what I grew up on, like romance in that respect. Like, I needed it to be a little bit more romance included with the sex. I'm glad to hear you say that, because I think, not that, you know, I need any validation. I feel the way I feel, but I do, like, I have told people who I recommended the show to, and they like text me. They're like, I'm not into this, you know? And I'm like, please just make it to episode 3. I promise it's worth your time. And every single time it's been that way. Like, every single time they're like, oh my God, episode 3. And then they're just like, go through it, the whole thing. So
that is so interesting. I mean, I love Scott and Kip, but I mean, maybe it's because I read a lot of romances, and like, it's very clear that this is not the stringless relationship they think it is. You know, to me, it was like really clear that they were fond of each other.
Right.
And I love a good friends to lovers. They weren't really
rivals. Did you ever hear like people say like it's not rivals to lovers, it's idiots to lovers?
Right. Exactly. Like, you're like babies. You're falling in love. We all see it. I mean, so to me, that's very interesting, because I too feel like I need to have some sort of emotional connection. I enjoy it better watching sexy scenes with that rather than without, even though it's beautiful even without, you know, like a well done sex scene. But for me, I think I just knew. I was like, oh yeah, they are extraordinarily fond of each other right away.
Episode 1, where they're in the workout room and they're like trying to beat each other, like in the amount of reps that they're doing. And it's like that rivalry where it's like, oh, I'm going to do it. It's tension. The first 2 episodes growing the tension. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my gosh, I can only be edged for so long. Yeah. After episode 2, there was no longer edging. You got to pay off for everything you got. And I love that.
So I had a question about that scene that you were talking about where they were kind of feeling each other out in the workout room. How realistic was that? From the perspective of someone who was closeted back then.
Oh, gosh. It's interesting, because I think that in a way it was realistically portrayed. Because so in some queer culture, and again, I'm not a monolith, but cruising culture. And so thinking about like bathhouses and saunas and whatnot, there's tells that you try to do. You try to get closer. You try to get like some form of contact. There's a lot of reality in that situation. Like how it relates to like how I would try to find like other folks like me. It's interesting because I was growing up in the age of social media becoming super popular. We're thinking about like 2010, 2013 era. Grindr, the lovely app, first came out. And so my way of finding other folks was through these apps. And I think to now today, the apps in some way, shape, or form are where most people find connections, especially for right now, like immediate sex. Watching the show made me long for like that type of like romance, which is like running into someone random, not knowing if they're gay or straight, but like feeling it out and it working out that way. Because like my husband, I've known since high school. I'm one of those weird moments where it's high school sweethearts, but he didn't know if he was, and like we worked it out over time type things. So I lucked out in that regard. I married my best friend. Like I mentioned earlier, like I'm not a perfect person. I've put him through a lot of shit, and he has kept up with me through it. And I'm so thankful that he's allowed me to grow with him. But it's one of those things where if I didn't have that, I probably would be finding some random hookup. But the apps are truly like a way of finding folks. I think anymore, like that cruising culture is beginning to fade of like running into each other at the bathhouse and like locking eyes and seeing like if one thing will lead to another. At least it doesn't happen as often in my friend groups that I hear about.
Yeah. Seems a lot more difficult, right? Like than getting on an app and knowing that pretty much everyone on the app is there for the one thing that you guys all want.
But you know what I always forget is that the show is set back in time. Like always forget
2008.
Like
it is 2008, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like you can see the progression of the phones, etc. So they're not in the same place as we are now. I totally agree. Even no matter what you're seeking, gay, straight, queer, hetero, whatever it is that you're seeking, a lot more people now find connections online first, you know? But that like thing that they did where they locked eyes in the gym, especially like Ilya was like seeking
he was feeling him out. He definitely was like, if I touch his hand when he touches the water bottle, like will he be like, you know, or like he didn't run away, right? So I think he was.
And it felt that, I mean, I think that maybe made sense for 2008, you know, that kind of, at least, you know, maybe,
and,
I don't know.
And something else too there is like with the bisexuality, if it didn't land, it's no skin off his back because dude bro culture too, where it's like, I'm going to smack like my teammate's ass or something and whatnot. It's like, it's the code switching that you can get away with a little bit versus like if I'm a gay guy and I'm trying to advance on another person, I don't know if they're gay or straight. In 2008, this was before gay marriage was legalized. This is still at a time where like being gay wasn't as okay as it is today. And I think honestly, with the acceptance of gayness by especially women has allowed that ability for us to be more open in the world. And I think like one of the great things about this show is it introduced a lot of this to a large group of people, especially women, that allow maybe some misconceptions about the gay community to be unwrapped a little bit. It's like a safe way to get an experience into the life and world of a gay person in a safe space. And maybe allow you to reflect and unpack some things.
Okay, so you bring up a good point. And so I've seen some criticism about the fact that these books are written by supposedly by a straight woman and consumed, I don't want to say primarily, because I don't know if that's true, but a lot of straight women are watching this show. And there's some criticism from the queer community. Is this like a fetish for straight women? Like, does it actually like represent the queer community well? It was also directed by a gay man, so I know that like adds another layer to it. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I also have heard and seen the criticism, but my stance on it is art is for everybody, and how you analyze it is personal to you. So the books were made by a woman, presumably straight, could be queer. Because queer is a broad spectrum.
Yeah.
And this media getting out has touched the lives of many queer people, myself included. And I think that stories can be told, just like how, like, in the very beginning of this, I said there was a gay character played by a straight man. I think that can be okay. It's how you go about, like, presenting it, doing your research on, like, what it is to be like that. Because, like, being gay and queer, there's so many different avenues. Like, as a white gay man, I'm going to have a different experience than a black gay man or a mm-hmm. trans person. Mm-hmm. So there's so many different experiences that can happen mm-hmm. in queerness. But I think that this show has done so much good for representation. It did not follow the dark trope of killing off characters. And so it's like these are stories. Stories are for everybody. And how you process it and how you internalize it, how you reflect on it is uniquely personal. So as a straight woman watching the show, I think that there's a lot that you can take from it that would be different yeah. than what a gay person might or a queer person might take from it. And I think that is okay. But what you do with that information or try to perpetuate onto others, that's where it becomes problematic.
I think it's important, if you don't mind, that we do talk about Ilya being bi. Yeah. Because, you know, from what I understand in the queer community, there's, you know, a lot of people like complain about like bi erasure, right? Like we don't really hear a lot from about bi characters. Do you want to talk about that?
There's a lot of icky. Yeah. I feel surrounding bisexuality. And when I say icky, I mean like stereotypes, perceptions and whatnot. So my husband is bisexual and like I worked a lot through some of like my insecurities by talking to him about it. One of the great things that we do is communicate and over communicate to points, but it helps us with our relationship. But I really appreciated the way that they handled Ilya's bisexuality, especially when he mentioned like, well, I'm not gay, not fully. There's always like this perception of like, okay, so if a bisexual person marries a certain gender, they're no longer really about the other. And like, no, that is definitely not the case. Like my husband, like, cause like whenever we're like fawn over people, I'll be like, oh my gosh, like this one guy, oh my God, so hot. And he'll be like, oh yeah, no, this is one woman. Absolutely stunning goddess. And I'm like, slay. Like, that's great. And I try to pull him up a little bit because there's like this unfair expectation on him that it's like, I want him to be more expressive about his sexuality. And it's allowed me to like process like my queerness, my gayness, and even masculinity to points. Bisexuality is like, bi erasure is something that happens often without even thinking about it. And I was always so scared, like, oh, will he leave me for a woman? Like, will I not be good enough or whatnot? Because I was the first man he's ever been with and the only man he has ever been with. I'm like the miracle one. And so like in the very early phases of like my marriage, or not marriage, but my relationship with him, I was like, oh my gosh, do I have to do extra? Like, will I lose him? And then like I unpacked those misconceptions, like he'll always validate me and be like, no, I'm with you for a reason. And that reason is because I love you. Mm. Like, sex aside. And it also allowed me an opportunity to ask him about straight sex.
That's really interesting. When Shane and Ilya are at the cottage and Ilya brings up, I could marry Svetlana, right? Shane is obviously head over heels in love with Ilya at this point. And the moment Ilya says, like, I could marry Svetlana, and Shane is like, but you like women, right? I think that Shane has insecurities about dating or being with a bi man, because at any point he's like, well, he could just leave me for Svetlana or any of the other gorgeous women that's around him.
I guarantee you, Shane was also thinking he could also be with a woman and have a much easier life, because Shane obviously loves Ilya at that point too, where it's like
true. He
could be able to not worry about all the things in Russia. He could live a very easy life, happy life with a woman and not have to worry about anything. I guarantee you he was thinking about that.
Yeah. Like even in that club scene, the chemistry with Rose is like, it's just like bopping. Mm-hmm. And then you see Ilya's chemistry with the random woman and he's like, you want to play this game? Look at me.
I win.
But he was pulling it off, right? Like, and Shane can't.
Yeah.
He can't.
What was your favorite part? Like, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene is the bar scene, all the things she said. I love a dramatic moment. The music and everything was great. The cinematography was great. Everything about it was great. When I'm at the bar and I'm very drunk, I want that moment where I see someone from across the room and lock eyes and have that dramatic moment. And I've had that moment a lot of times in bars that end up usually leading, though, to me making out with that said person versus like this, we're grinding on different people to try to make each other more jealous to just like build the tension where I'm like, oh, now maybe I want to try that. The interesting thing about that being my favorite scene, it is a scene that my husband can't watch. There's a lot of things about it that are triggering. The jealousy aspect of it, we didn't talk about this, but also there's the idea of the beard and being with a woman when you're with a man on the side because you can't tell anybody. And so there's a lot of things that bring back bad memories about it. So my favorite scene is something that I can only share every so often, but he said that to me the other day and I sat with that and I was like, I can see why. I totally understand.
My stomach swoops every time I watch that scene. I love the swoop, but you know what? That flip that you just did about what it could mean to someone where that doesn't feel good.
Trauma. Yeah.
I never thought of it and I can see that actually. And who knows what trauma, like as you said, like if Rose was not as supportive, who knows what would have been, what that would have been like, you know, for Shane too. I always feel like every time we talk there's something new, like something I'm like, oh, I thought of this, you know,
and that's what makes it art, right? Mason, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I had a blast.
I feel like I needed a second to just sit with that because, you know, that what always shifts me after a conversation like this is that like it's a reminder that representation just doesn't land the same way for everyone, right? For us, we look at the show, we see it as art, we see it as craft, structure, you know, we see the cinematography, the needle drops, the narrative pacing, all these other things. But for someone else watching it, like they're recognizing pieces of themselves and their own lives. And that's like different, you know, and I'm so happy we had this interview together.
You know, there are elements of the show that resonate like that for all of us, right? Like, I think I said this in the immigrant episode or even the neurodivergence episode. Beauty of the show is that not every topic becomes, oh, that's such a very special episode of Peter Bivalry. I mean, it sounds strange, but you know what I mean? It's like just kind of in the show, it permeates the show, it just exists in the show. I think that's what lends itself to sort of some of what Mason was saying at the end, taps into that human experience. But there are going to be elements of the show that will always more resonate with someone's actual lived experience. And I just loved hearing how it resonated for Mason.
I like the fact that the characters on the show are not like, you know, flattened into symbols. They're not like cautionary tales, as we discussed, right? Like they're not here to represent the entire community. I think that kind of like dimensionality is not often given in queer storytelling, but like we're getting it here.
That is such a good point, you know, because they're allowed to be assholes or boring or hockey players or any of those things, and they're not representing anyone but themselves because at the baseline it is a very intimate story about two people, right? Like these external elements exist, but you're not watching it that way. It's not, it's trying not to be like this beacon of representation, but by not trying it becomes that. Do you know what I mean?
It's like a soft representation, you know, like in a way that like you can see, like many, many can see themselves in it, you know?
Yeah.
So I like that. Because at the end of the day, everyone deserves sunshine. So do you want to move into our moment of the sunshine of the week?
Thanks for asking this remarkable question.
You're welcome, darling.
So my moment of sunshine was actually, we spent an overnight with my kids and my husband in Philly. And that's the first time we've done that. And it was really fun. It was a short enough trip to feel like we didn't have to pack our house to travel with kids. But it was far enough away that it felt like an escape. Yeah. We went to the Beauty and the Beast musical. I loved it, but my son said it was the worst part of the weekend. We stayed at the W on the 40th floor, My kids were fascinated by the floor-to-ceiling windows. Mm-hmm. And then we had breakfast in a place that had like 8,000 different types of French toast. And then we went to the Franklin Museum, which is really fun.
The Franklin Institute?
Yes, the Franklin Institute. Yes, yes. Yeah, the Franklin Institute.
You could tell you don't go to Philly often.
I know. We just don't. Someone told me Philly is so fun.
Someone, just a random person.
This boring person told me. And actually, she was right about
this. No, you're the boring one. I'm the asshole. Get it right. Get it right.
So it was really fun.
So my moment of sunshine is something very nice and sweet about our mutual friend.
What?
So the woman who introduced me to Mason, our guest today, is a very dear friend. I'm super grateful to her. And she's super supportive of this podcast. And Anu, she's always texting us, right? In like a group text as if she's like having a conversation with us while we're doing this podcast.
Also, she's my friend also. Oh, just
right. Okay.
FYI, just letting everybody know.
And she is a wonderful human being. And I cannot wait to hear what she has to say about this episode. Next week on Everyone Deserves Sunshine, we're talking about how art inspires art.
So subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to say hi to the girls in the crease, find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads at Everyone Deserves Sunshine.
And email us at everyonedeservessunshine@gmail.com. Because we love your emails, new episodes drop on Mondays.
See you then.